that is very well known here. Chair, the presentation will. Chair, sorry, we do have some colleagues who are coming here. Yeah, our researchers are here. Chair, the presentation will be made by myself and Bongani. And I will initially comment on strategic issues. But as we know, this presentation is made in terms of Chapter 13, Section 214, subsection.
Rather skip that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Just common knowledge.
No? Okay, great.
Boring stuff.
Thank you. I thought that was a lot. Our presentation is structured in terms of strategic issues, which I will address. Then our general observations on the bill, which will be addressed by Bongani. And then there will be comments on allocation to subnational government, introduction of new conditional grants to subnational government, comments on government's response to FFC recommendations, and then a conclusion. In terms of strategic issues, we want to note that the Division of Revenue Bill as a document is becoming very complex and large in size. It is voluminous, we are realizing. And we feel then that something should be done in terms of addressing that. We'll elaborate a little bit further on that strategic issue. We'd like also to say that we see that the grants are being proliferated. They are just too many, especially this year. And we recommend that these grants should be subjected to rigorous analysis before introduction. And we are also realizing that there is a danger that most of these grants might bypass the dollar. And this will compromise transparency. And we feel that that should be taken note of and something be done in terms of that. And also, there are, as a result of proliferation of this grant, the issue of capacity building is being dispersed. And we are calling for coordination and that they should be evaluated together. In terms of implementation of boundary red demarcations, the Commission reiterates its proposal for a full account of the fiscal capacity implications associated with the transition phase of demarcation. And we also indicate that norms and standards differ across provinces and municipalities, and that should also be taken into account. We also indicate that there are delays in policy implementation. We cite the example of the REDS and accreditation of municipalities. And we indicate that stalling some of the implementation of the policies results in uncertainties, especially the ongoing DPLG policy review on the system of provincial and local government lead to uncertainty and poor service delivery. And related to that, of course, is then poor maintenance, unfunded mandates, and poor housing delivery. And we recommend that timelines be fixed to DPLG processes so as to bring certainty and movement on the policy implementation. Then there's the issue, of course, of intergovernmental loan agreements. We indicate that government extended the loan to fund Gautrain Rapid Rail Link. The decision, of course, was consistent with borrowing powers of Provincial Government Act of 1996. But then the Commission pointed out in 2007 the potential risk for the IDFR system and principles of no bailout. The Commission recently received the documentation on the loan, and the recommendations will be submitted to the Minister in line with the Borrowing Powers of Provincial Government Act of 1996 and Section 230 of the Constitution. If fact, this latter point we will elaborate on at a later time, because we got the document when our processes were already far advanced. So we'll get back to it and it will be incorporated. And Chair, we also wanted to say that in terms of the strategic issues, we are aware that very little can be done at the moment in terms of rectifying some of the issues we are raising. But we are indicating or requesting that this be rolled over for next time so that the new government can address these issues. Now, Chair, as I indicated in my outline, Bongani will take from general organizations on the bill. And then as we move along, he will get the assistance of some of our researchers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my task is just to focus on some specific issues that that the Commission would actually like to note or to raise with respect to the 2009 Division of Revenue Bill. I think some of the issues which are listed in my slide number 5, basically, some of the issues that I list have been in one way or another addressed in the final bill. So, for example, the point that refers to the municipal infrastructure grant for cities basically is no longer an issue, because the bill that was sent to the Commission for comment was subsequently revised towards the final tabling of that, and that matter was addressed. With respect to the expanded public works program incentive grant, I think the Commission welcomes the attempt at addressing employment through government expenditure programs. And that's a general kind of a comment. I think in terms of, which basically means that the motivation for the grant is actually welcomed, but it's something that is to be welcomed by the Commission. But the Commission would also like to raise a flag, basically, to say we need to adopt a cautious approach in utilizing some of these types of programs to create employment. What is important, one would assume, is the kinds of skills which ultimately lead to the sustainability of the kind of jobs that one seeks to promote through such kind of an intervention. Because if the intervention is based simply on numbers of people that get jobs, and then you reward that through the incentive mechanism, you might find that you introduce some incentives that might actually work counter to the primary objective, which is about creating jobs that actually move people out of poverty. Now, in this respect, we basically, from the Commission's view, is that there is a need to actually evaluate the overall performance of the expanded public works program since its inception, and to identify clearly the types of jobs that were generated or that have been generated, and the sustainability thereof, and in the process be in a position to refine the framework and the design of the incentive grant, so that you focus on the right things rather than simply focusing on target and numbers that are created, is to ensure that there's some sustainability in the types of jobs that one is creating through this intervention. I think so basically the view there is that we need to adopt a cautious approach and evaluate this. Now, the issue around which arises in Section 42, which relates to duties to Category C municipal budget. Okay. Now, here, basically, I think the issue is really about clarifying certain types of responsibilities for between Category C and Category B municipalities. I think that's something that the Commission welcomes. Now, let me focus on the issue around conditional grants to provinces that have been introduced. I think in the chairperson's opening remark, basically he talks about a proliferation of conditional grants, and here the concern basically is with the size of those grants. Now, let me just upfront say that in our discussions, in our consultations with the National Treasury as per requirements of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, we basically have had the opportunity to discuss some of these things. And what turns out is that most of these small grants are actually not permanent types of grants. They are once-off types of grants. Now, the concern basically from our perspective is the extent to which one can beat about the conditional grant drumbeat, and every time you need to deal with a problem, you must then use a conditional grant to deal with it. So where somebody is failing to allocate resources for specific purposes, you then come in with a conditional grant to deal with that. I think from the Commission's perspective, there are clear principles that we have put in place, and I think we have agreed with government on those basic principles on when and how to use conditional grants. And I think that for some of the programs here that are being funded through those conditional grants, there's a feeling from the Commission that probably not a sufficient enough analysis in terms of the reasons advanced and purpose for those grants was done to basically arrive at a decision to fund those through the conditional grant mechanism. I think a key issue around that relates to disaster management. Disaster management grants, whilst one would accept that you don't actually plan for disasters, one might want to re-look at the overall disaster management framework and how different spheres of government must actually respond to that framework. I think if one goes back to I suspect that it was in 2003 that the Commission basically in this same particular process raised the issue around funding of disasters. And at that point, I think the Commission's view was that the conditional grant mechanism for disaster management at that point was supported by the Commission, because in the absence of a disaster management framework, that actually made sense, that when a disaster actually occurs, you then must have an intervention through that. When we then saw the disaster management framework, then when it was tabled, the Commission did make its own recommendations around that. And I think there was some recommendations that dealt with the need for its sphere of government to basically set aside funding to deal with the disasters. Now, I'm not sure whether the current mechanism basically allows for that. I think it's something that we just wanted to raise a flag on, because you're having such small amounts of money. I think some of them, 50 million, and they're applying across nine provinces. I think that those are very small amounts to basically put in there. Yeah, need to think more seriously about that. So here, basically, the Commission is saying that we will be carrying out an in-depth study around the disaster management framework and how we can deal with some of those issues. With respect to the local government conditional grants, I think that we noticed one grant here, that's the Rural Transport Services Infrastructure Grant. There was in the Commission's submission last year on the annual division of revenue, which is part of the recommendations, an issue around public transport infrastructure. And the thinking there was that this basically might need to be rolled out to a whole range of municipalities. And I think here the Commission welcomed the fact that this grant has been introduced. And also, more important is the fact that it's been introduced as a pilot kind of a grant, and therefore the Commission will also be following closely the outcomes in this process, because as in the past, the Commission has been of the view that we need to take a very holistic view in terms of how we deal with our infrastructure programs, and I think there is obviously a need to look at this grant also in that context. With respect to capacity development grants, I think there is quite a number of capacity development grants that I think in our 2005 submission, we did raise certain issues around the need to evaluate at some point what these capacity grants, especially as they focus at the local government sphere, what is it that they are actually achieving. I think that there is obviously a realization from the Commission that there is a gap in understanding. Some of the grants are there's serious understanding around those grants, but when one looks at the reports from the Auditor General on municipal performance, you find that there's still very serious capacity problems, and therefore one would then want to evaluate some of these issues around this grant. In this respect, I must say in advance that in the Commission's recommendations that are for the 2010 Division of Revenue, which the Commission will be finalizing in the next month or so, there will be certain recommendations that actually emerge out of the work that the Commission has been doing since 2005 on this capacity grant. This thing takes a long time. Okay, I think that's much about. Now, with respect to the local government conditional grant, there's also the new grant, the National Energy Efficiency and Demand Side Management Grant. Now, this is a welcome, grant in as far as the Commission is concerned. But from the Commission's perspective, and I would want to link it to with something that I'll come back to when I discuss government's response to the Commission's recommendations. From the Commission's perspective, the issues around energy efficiency are also an important part of the work that we're actually doing. Now, what one picks up around this grant is that it's primarily focused on electricity. In that respect, falls short of the term energy efficiency might include other forms of energy outside of electricity. So in terms of design, there are certain issues that the Commission would be raising and sharing with the terms of the intentions and everything, I think the Commission supports this this class. Now let me go to the comments that we have with respect to government's response to our recommendation to the 2009 Division of Revenue. Now, the discussions around these recommendations, Chairperson, take place continuously throughout the year, and some of the recommendations basically we see them being implemented, including recommendations from the past. As we interact with government.
Mr. Shek, do you want to comment on these recommendations, the responses?
Do I want to?
I think you must look at the matters of life and death there.
Yes.
Okay.
What I've done actually is to pick up what I think are the matters of life and death. I think. One area, Chairperson, that we would like to see in terms of the response that we get from government as a commission is that we should basically see more details in terms of, let me say that probably 98% of the recommendations that we made, basically there's a general agreement between ourselves and the government. Now, what we would like to see, though, is more details around the implementation for recommendations that have been accepted. Because what the problem becomes...
That's a real of my point. Because if you're going to see the implementation detail in that response, I do think that it's a bit problematic. Because if for instance, they had known... I mean, look... Let's talk 2010. The recommendations are not yet out for 2010. And I think that must evolve in terms of the strategic plan, just in terms of the detail now, if that's what you would ask for. I think that would be unfair, because I think let's give government, if especially agree, but then there's a broader framework. Working out the detail, I mean, you always know that people say the devil is always in the detail. If you surely would want them also to say the detail in the response, I think that's a big problematic. But I do get your point. But I'm just saying, don't we think we're really creating some big problems now? Broadly speaking, they would want to say some of the things in a broader sense, but then really raising even the regulation in terms of trying to respond to the recommendation, but it's fine, proceed.
Okay, without.
No, I thought in the same breath, that complements what Chairperson said in terms of shortcoming in time frames. So I hope we put that together. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Now I will leave you there, Mr. Chairperson, and proceed. Let me deal with the specific issues that are arising out of the response from government. The first one would relate to the issue around education, where we dealt with the issue of the location of the learner transport function. And I think the recommendation was a strong recommendation to finalize this matter. And when we sat here last year with the Department of Education on the one side, and also with the Department of Transport on the other side, we were given certain responses that basically indicated that this issue was being finalized. And unfortunately, our discussions have come up with a different kind of a story in terms of where this function lies. So basically, that is a matter that is still unresolved. issue around augmenting local government revenue. There is, obviously, we know that there has been the issue around the replacement of the RSC levy that has been agreed upon. Now, from our
I just need clarity, but when we also respond, we must be very clear what is it that FFC is saying. In line with the request that you had made, that let those recommendations be those recommendations where there's clear what is the current disagreement or something. Now, FFC says, for example, on the issue of education, there is this agreement. Now, I'm not sure exactly if then in the disagreement we could just be told that this is what FFC proposes and this is what was called what government response is. In fact, in front of me, I do have what you call, I'm looking at these responses. I don't seem to see the big gap more than that, what I see, for instance, in this recommendation that has been referred to for now. It looks like there's a question of government is proposing a phasing in and what. So I just want to be very clear so that even when we're asking, for instance, government to respond, it should be clear. What are these, what they call the differences? Where are the differences?
No, the FFC says, in fact, it's true, we had convened a meeting even ourselves. There seemed to be agreement, but there's also agreement from the point of view of government. But then the problem goes back to the issue they were raising of detail. And the detail is that then there some provinces disagree. And I think it's not a matter that we must throw back to government. It's a matter for committees, for instance, just to call all provinces under one roof of education, all provinces of roads and transport, the position of government in terms of the responses in the Division of Revenue Bill are clear. And so we've got to raise the question, therefore, with all the provinces. In other words, FFC must provide us, therefore, with the information that says these are the departments that disagree in terms of implementing this thing. So that it makes it easy for committees then to start saying, but why do you disagree? Remember the question we were raising ourselves is that this thing is about access to school. And so if the departments of education in provinces disagree with this, then it means already they are depriving students. But then the FFC can respond. Over to you, Dr. Chair.
I think you're actually right. The point is there is this overall agreement, which is quite broadly Council of Education Ministers, and that's what we got. But we had to follow up with the Department of Education to basically ascertain that this indeed is now an issue that has been resolved. And what we pick up is that it's not been resolved. I think the number of provinces that are in disagreement is 5, if I'm not mistaken, but we can provide you with the actual provinces that are actually in disagreement with that. So that's something that we can actually provide. And basically, that's the only issue there, that because as far as we're concerned, so it's still not resolved. That's the point of that. The next issue, basically, let me just focus on the recommendation around augmenting local government revenue from the Commission side was that the text that actually replaces the RSC levy be a good local text. And by that, we basically mean a text where the local authority has power over the base and over the rate. So basically, it's a text that they can actually control. Now, the fuel levy, whilst welcomed as a revenue source, it falls short of what one calls a good local tax. And basically, the issue really here is no longer one of replacement or of whether or not if I give you this text, then I say that is it. The commission is of the view that municipalities should still go out and investigate whatever revenue sources are available and use the municipal fiscal powers and functions act to basically introduce whatever local taxes they would like to introduce. I think the fuel levy is simply a revenue sharing mechanism. It's not a tax for local government. That's the issue from the Commission's perspective. Whilst we agree that it goes a long way towards strengthening revenue sources for municipalities, it comes short of a local tax. That's which is what the Commission has recommended. The point is, when one thinks about taxes, you think about what you use them for. I think if we understand it from that perspective, we're not proposing more tax. We're just saying municipalities need to run their business, and what are the revenue sources that they require in order to be able to run those. In most cases, municipalities use benefit taxes, so you will be able to see what your taxes are buying, and if you can find the link between what your local authority is giving to you and what you are paying to its coffers, I think you can live with more taxes. But if you can't see what they are doing, but you are still paying tax, which is what you do fuel levy. I can bring you back to it. This fuel levy, we all of it paid. Whether I live in Johannesburg or I live in Louis Trichard, I will still pay that fuel levy. Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, and the big metros will actually benefit from that directly. Does that link with what they provide? It does not. So I would probably live with the tax that comes from the city that I live in than live with the tax that I give to a city that I don't live in. But that's a discussion. The next issue basically relates to the electricity investment and pricing. I think there's a general agreement with the Commission from government perspective, and there are certain things that we can see that are already happening with respect to that. But what we are saying is that there should be a demonstrable intention or commitment from government side in terms of finalizing the restructuring of the electricity distribution industry. And I think the problem that can arise with the kind of failure to finalize those matters is that there is a negative impact on the maintenance of electricity infrastructure, and one does not want to live with that. That's that. The World Cup 2010 transport infrastructure issue, I think I've already spoken about this, and we basically... You don't have that? Okay. I think the reason why you don't have it on your slide is because I removed it. So I'm not going to talk. So if right, my slide basically still has it. So I'm sorry about that. Right. The conclusion basically is that we welcome the changes that have been introduced to the bill. we also invite this committee in particular to note the strategic issues that we have raised that I think the chairperson spoke about at the beginning. We also would like to reiterate our position that government should address the reasons behind the proliferation of conditional grants. I think we can have a discussion about that. We support the basic principles behind most of the new grants that have been introduced, especially the ones that are of a longer term nature. But we also would like to caution against a rapid rollout, because one needs to get the design of some of these grants right. And we also welcome the response that government has given to our recommendations, and I must also say that we would like to see some details of implementation, even if, because the recommendations are made over for a three-year period. We know that this year you might not be able to do this, but over 3 years, certainly if there are certain things that one agrees with, we might want to know what sort of implementation issues arise. And that would also help from our own side to fit into the process rather than waiting for this particular period to fit into that.
You know, part of the most pertinent question in your last word would be, would that be part of your core mandate, wanting to know the detail of implementing? I think that's another matter we must not delve into, because clearly your mandate is clear. And so the detail of implementation surely are not your business. Madam Kunu? Mr. Botta? To say on the taxes.
Yes, it was about the taxes. The issue of doing away with RSCs and expecting the local governments to collect their own taxes. When the municipalities, I mean, some of them are so poor, where on earth are they expected to collect the taxes? Because the reason behind the RSCs was that there are bigger towns. Let's take Richards Bay and Embangeni. This is where people work. Zululand, Utungulu, they have no firms whatsoever. You go and stay there. If you love it. Right? The people are excellent because they are coming nearer Richards Bay. And they don't have work. Now, these smaller municipalities like Ndambanana, Omkanyagude, where do they get money? Because there are no firms whatsoever. I think this has got to be reviewed. I mean, if we just say this, they should set for appropriate taxes. Even the children in those areas are not properly educated, because the schools do not have resources to produce better educated people. And the ones who are educated run away to Johannesburg, to Devon, where they become big guys. We have a problem.
Yes, thank you. Yes, there, for your clarity, on page 3, this sending all new grants should be subjected to rigorous analysis before introduction. Now, what I read here, perhaps I'm wrong, is that new grants, there's no business plan for them, if you read it correctly, because no grant will be introduced before there's not a business plan to say for what and how that must be implemented. Now, I don't know, perhaps FFC can just clear out what do they mean. Because that, the implementation is already, they must be implemented, it's already on the ground. You not gave a grant to a province or anything if there's not a business plan in detail. It's not just a dumping. So I would like to clarify that. Chair, and then on page 6, the conditional grants to provinces, agriculture disaster grant and housing grant and health
disaster grants. I think this is both the other issue of cholera and Limpopo thing. But see, the grant is there. I don't know if the FEC makes recommendations in regarding of the process of paying out that grant. Because the delay in paying out, the grants are there, the money is there, but how this will be implemented is a problem. If there is a drought, if there is housing disaster or storm water or anything, that takes 6, 7, 8, 9 months, time about 2 years before that grant can be paid out. I think here in the Western Cape somewhere was this peak disaster or they killed pigs and things. But here, some of that farmers, it's 2.5, 3 years, they still haven't got that money. So that is the issue here. It's not the grant, but the implementation. I don't know if the FEC make recommendations to say, how can we shorten this process? Because I don't know if there's a part of their recommendations to the government in regarding of that process. Chair, I don't want to comment on this fuel levy because as far as I'm concerned, Chair, and I'm perhaps wrong, until otherwise convinced in regarding that make the riches more rich. If I take hotel, funny. All your metrics, the money of your rich tax bases are there. I know the municipalities, and perhaps they will come in, I don't know how they will interface new levies to that. They can't be a metro because they can't supply water. But say, out of Limpopo's 32 municipalities, perhaps one can survive for income. The other city will not survive. Now, the poorer of the poorest in that rural area pay now. And I don't know, I don't want to dispute the issue, but the poorest of the poor pay for the metro. And I know the metro is not getting any grants now, but the municipalities will get grants. They will get some equitable share and other issues. But in future, how will that be implemented? I'm not talking about this exactly now. And that's really a concern for me here in regarding of that. Chair, and also on page 12, also the conclusion, the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The approach in respect of issues of implementation and how the grant will be rolled out. Here, I'm still not clear there. Because, as I said in the beginning, each and every grant must have a business plan. Unless Treasury is thinking, I will give this grant to provinces. And I don't think that happened. There must be a total business plan for the grants used for implementation. So they can't be now disputed. The monitoring of that grant is a different issue. How this is implemented? Because there's actually a fill up to the equitable share. So yes, thank you.
On page 5, if you go to page 5, Mr. Potter, section 38 of the Division of Revenue addresses that problem you are raising about the flow of money. In other words, disasters, droughts, and so on. That clause is put in place precisely to deal with those problems. It is not the responsibility of the FFC to raise it, but it is catered for. Section 38, if you look at page 5, already addresses that problem that you are raising. Okay, let's then have another question, Mr. Sokoni, Mr. Colin.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that also I share Comrade Botel's concern. I think around this issue of saying the issue of obviously of the proliferation of grass is understandable. However, how do we address the issues? I mean, would what you call FFC, for example, agree with the issues that Comrade Otra is raising, in that, for instance, there is this fund, it's not called a disaster fund from government, what is it called? A contingency fund, a contingency reserve, which is supposed to address some of the issues. But the reality is that what Comrade Otra is saying, now, what is it then? Then that could be recommended so that these issues are addressed urgently, because the disaster fund or whatever, if there's a disaster and there's a desire from government to address it, but it does not address it immediately, the provinces will come in, they will tell you that some of the beneficiaries, they get lost, because they stay for years waiting for this to be compensated, and compensation takes long. But shouldn't we be accepting this, that in a short term, we should be able to address this, the issue of prompt response, so that then if we're looking at long-term kind of responses, clearly your contingency, what you call the reserve, are meant to address these issues. But for now, I'm sure all of us in this house will agree that hence there is this intervention. Clearly, somewhere there is a problem. Shouldn't we be supporting this kind of approach with a view that there should be a proper long-term strategy to deal with this? But also, I didn't understand FFC, where they have a problem with proliferation of what you call grants on the one hand. On the one hand, they support your pilot grants, and not what you call a short-term grant. What is the difference? Why would we support your pilot grants, which as well have got the same objectives as those short-term, what you call a grant? Because I think that in the input that we got from the report of the Auditor General, maybe you omitted to mention that the provinces would get this equitable share. I don't know if FFC would remember. Last year, 2007-2008, education was given 2.7 billion for infrastructure to build it. But it was only equitable, what you call a share. Guess what happened when they got the 2.7? How many of them budgeted for this infrastructure? Now, if you give them money and throw it and say, okay, you are a fear of government, go and what you call and budget on this matter, and it doesn't happen, what recourse do you have? Shouldn't we then be saying that as a short-term measure, this should happen? Meanwhile, we're finding measures of saying, how do we ensure that these monies go to where they are intended, rather than what you call, because it is open-minded. They have a discretion. The constitution is very clear in terms of your equitable share, but you're not going to address what you want. I mean, the thing that we see at local government, your disabilities, it's not that monies are not there. Monies are there. And maybe if you look at the Auditor General's report, you find that grants go to salaries, not to what they are intended for. Meanwhile, there are stringent conditions for grants. But still, some local government, local authorities, they still find a way of diverting these funds from us. Now, if you give them that as equitable share now where they have the discretion, some of the, what they call, comrades is speaking about some municipalities which don't have, which can't generate their own, what they call, a fund. But when it comes to salaries for the councillor, they don't choose your minimum, what they call, salaries. They choose your top. So that these monies that are meant for service delivery go there. Now, how do we address those issues if there are no conditionalities that are set to deal with those matters? The other issue, Chair, that really interests me, it fascinates me. The FSC keeps on raising it, I think, in good faith. The issue of taxation by local government. Well, if you're talking to Metro, they don't have a problem. Maybe they can find ways of dealing with this. But, I mean, of finding some form of tax or another. Now, if you're talking about many, what you call, small municipalities. You're talking about Meshawe, which 100% depends entirely on the grant. Now, where will they find the room to raise, what you call, the taxes? And now, well, what we have found, Chairperson, is that the new president of the U.S. has asked for $787 billion. Now, to fund the banks now. Now, what about your municipalities? Whose source of revenue comes from your ordinary communities? So, what do we do? Now, I'm saying, last year, we passed your Fiscal and Functions Act to allow this to happen. Some years back, I think it was 2003, if you remember, Mr. Kumar, we passed your provincial taxation. Even today, they have not been able to implement it. The reasons are simple. One, there's competition as well, whether it's between provinces or whether it's between municipalities, for investment. Now, this municipality of that province is afraid that if it increases taxation, will they get investment or what? But also, the from this division of revenue, National Salary is saying, we see that there is an increase on infrastructure grants. In order to compensate for those who are to cut a thing. Now, and I think that FFC says, for instance, Auditor General's report says, whether it's municipalities, whether it's provinces, they've not been able to utilize those resources fully. Now, I'm saying this proposal of increasing taxes or of local government putting taxes, when we put it in that context, now, where those authorities are not able to make use of the resources that are made available to them. Some of them are given money, so in fact they can't use 75% of the, what they call it, of the budget given to someone else. You know, there are, in some provinces, there are departments like that. They give it, even the 25% now that is left with them. They're unable to, what you call it, to make use of it. So, well, we're saying, so should we continue perhaps with this proposal of taxing, of allowing the, what you call it, the municipalities to tax? People from the Western Cape, they register their cars outside the Western Cape and come back and reside in the Western Cape because they are trying to pave the, what you call your taxation on what you call on licenses. So I'm saying, so this proposal, for me, I just need more clarity. Maybe we can, what you call it, today. I'm not sure if today we'll be able to do it, but just over time. So we really need to become clearer and clearer as to what is this proposal exactly. Thank you, Chair.
The Commission on page 3 indicated that norms and standards differ across provinces and municipalities. I was expecting, therefore, the Commission to elaborate further on recommendations, or perhaps on the what called on the conclusion. It didn't come up. Though I have a page 65 on division of revenue, where FFC proposal stipulated all these recommendations. But I need perhaps to check if these norms and standards are working well on disaster, what's called condition grants. Thank you.
FFC.
There's quite a number of issues that have been raised here, but I think there's a common trend around the question. So what I'll do is, like, I'll give you some responses in terms of the general thrust of the questions, and then I'll ask one of my program managers to talk a little bit about the conditional grants issue in relation to the Auditor General's report. Taboko, you handle that a bit. Now, let me start off with the issue around small municipalities. That's Madam Kunu's question, which I can then link with Honourable Sokoni's question on the tax issue, and then let me start with that. Now, but then I'll talk a bit about the conditional grants versus the equitable share story before I hand over to Taboko to deal with specific. Now, the issue around municipalities and whether they are small or big in terms of revenue raising, it's nothing that can stop us saying exploit tax instruments that are available to you per the Constitution Section 229, which basically assigns tax powers to municipalities. And so there, the point is, in terms of our division of revenue process, given whatever taxes are being exploited and the tax bases that apply across different municipalities, our division of revenue process must necessarily take that into account, and that's one of the provisions in Section 214. So where a municipality is entirely dependent on grants, even though a tax is available for it to actually exploit, and there is no base, you can't expect them to raise taxes, so your transfer system must actually be responsive to that. Now, what I'm saying is, your small municipalities, the differences in tax capacity across the local government sphere should not be a reason to cap the exercise of revenue-raising powers of municipalities. The Constitution is very clear. There are criteria that your taxes must actually comply with in terms of the legislation applying to that. And those criteria are the criteria that will basically determine whether or not a tax that a municipality wants to impose has negative impacts on the overall economy of South Africa. So basically, we need to separate those issues, and then we can have the discussion around whether or not we can introduce new taxes. The other aspect to this basically is a concept that is closely linked to your fiscal decentralization process and to what extent one would actually want to ensure accountability for decisions taken at a level of government by a government to the individuals that it taxes. Right. Now, if a municipality is imposing taxes, it's the nearest to the people in terms of service delivery. It's the nearest fee. So if it's taxing people for services that people cannot actually see, there will be issues, basically. But if it's taxing people, if it imposes taxes for services that people, and by people I mean I include businesses, for services that it can see, for that those people can actually see, I don't think that you will have a problem. If you have, let's take an abstract example of a city that is growing so rapidly. Your transfer system cannot actually cope without you having to raise taxes through the general taxes to the general population. And this city is growing so fast because there's rapid economic activity in that city. So everyone is investing in that city. The roads are degenerating very quickly. Security situation is degenerating, and all of the other things that you can think about. How does that city basically deal with those types of issues, which are as a result of the local utilization of public services that the municipality generally provides? You would expect that people would be prepared to pay in order that you remove potholes, for example. Businesses would be prepared to pay in order that the city can remove potholes, because your grant system, the general grant system, does not grow as fast as you would actually grow your own revenue from your own taxes, of which you are actually in control. There's those differences, and those apply quite starkly when you go to very highly economically active areas. And I think the concept of decentralization is actually about that. So the discussion around whether or not municipalities should be afforded tax handles and provinces, and I'm glad that you, Mr. Sogoni, you're raising the issue around the Provincial Tax Regulation Process Act and the Municipal Fiscal Power and Functions Act. I mean, those things cost quite a lot of money to put together, quite a lot of time that Parliament spends debating and discussing and finally passing them. And then when you pass those things and then people sit back and fold their hands, do you blame yourself or you blame the people? I know that there are some provinces that have been investigating alternative revenue sources. Western Cape have proposed a long time, a fuel levy. At that point, it probably looked like something that one could tap into. Obviously, now the fuel levy is now also available here for municipalities. So there's such a of fuel levy, which I remember, was approved for the Western Cape. Gauteng are busy with the relooking at the PIT surcharge. I don't know when they're going to put that as a request. But the point is, you will find that there are some provinces that feel that they have the economic base, and there are some provinces that don't have the economic base. Even if you approve a tax, not everybody will actually exploit it. Now, you have to be, your transfer system has to be sensitive to those differences, and the Constitution requires it to be as such. So the issue of tax bases, uneven or unequal tax bases, is not really a big point of discussion in the choice of instruments for funding the delivery of basic services that constitutionally apply. I think that's what I want to say about taxes. So for individual municipalities, we can have a discussion, Mr. Sokoni, going forward about how some of these things can be dealt with. Let me come now to the issue of conditional grants and why the Commission is concerned with this concept. I take you back to a submission that was made in 2005. I think it was for the 2006 Division of Revenue. That went through quite a number of conditional grants that were then in the system, aimed at doing certain things. Some of them we found that they actually probably funding the same things, but in different types of names. And we made recommendations to merge some of the grants. We made recommendations to force some of the grants into the equitable share, and some of those processes actually took place. But the key issue around that was that we, in that submission, presented a set of criteria that one...
Your time has elapsed.
Has it?
By 10 minutes.
Can I wrap this up?
Perfect.
Right. There were criteria that we listed there that one must actually make a judgment call based upon in terms of the decision between using a conditional grant or the equitable share or some other type of a grant which is not necessarily a conditional grant to deal with specific problems. Now, in terms of the grants that we have looked at here, we have seen that the general thread around justification for those grants is that certain things have not been budgeted for, and therefore we need to introduce a conditional grant so that we can deal with this problem. From the Commission's perspective, that's not the best instrument for dealing with behavior, because you put a conditional grant, you introduce certain other behavioral incentives from whoever is responsible for that, and you might find quite a lot of substitution. Instead of conditional grants complementing funding that you have set aside for specific, people basically move it away and say, we'll only fund this with this conditional grant and we're not going to top up the thing. I don't know to what extent, but there is certainly in some grants that kind of evidence that one actually picks up when you look at the numbers of what the different types of grants actually do. So you increase it, you look at what is set aside for that particular program from the equitable share, you find that there are significant problems. When we dealt with the school nutrition program and made certain recommendations, we picked up some of those issues, and we even made reference to certain provinces where you don't touch my equitable share for this type of things. And you don't want those kinds of things to be happening. But the intention there is to ensure that provinces also spend money or budget or allocate resources for this particular program. But do you force them through conditionalizing money? I don't think that it's a good instrument for changing behavior. It introduces its own incentive programs. Let me stop there then, Mr. Chairperson, because I've eaten your time.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. The issue around Auditor General is linked to our submission on the capacity grants, that there must be the strategic focus must be linked to issues that are being raised by the Auditor General. And those relate to both the revenue side and the expenditure side. Because in certain municipalities, you'll find that there is no capacity. They can't employ chief financial officers and so forth. And therefore, their services fail. But in others, we find that challenges are related to expenditure. There's a mismanagement of funds. That is why you find that they don't follow proper procedures for movement of funds between programs. And the Auditor General obviously will make a qualified audit opinion. So a capacity program, therefore, must be tailored to look at issues of assisting municipalities' difference on an institutional matter and on HR issues, but also a preventative side to make sure that incidents of mismanagement are minimized as well. Thanks.
Chair, could I just make a small comment? I'm just looking at this FSC team. Is that there's a school in Johannesburg called JP High, JP Boys High. So I think they must address it. The chairpersons are here.
No, I think we've exhausted quite a bit of the issues with the treasure, with the FFC, and I think we've also presented our case to you a week ago.
You see, one of the problems the FFC raises, and just in conclusion, is that, of course, they say this is a strategic matter. Well, for us, it surely is not. Because the complexity of the revenue, the revenue peak is not very complex from where we're sitting. And it's becoming better day by day. But part of the problem here is that we're dealing with people here who would not do things kind of in good faith, if you like. And so from where we're sitting, I mean, when this thing is passed, annually it's as thick as this, you're right. But immediately it's passed, it's a tiny little piece of the law, act. Two times. And I've seen this every year. I always wonder. I'm saying it's always useful for us to be able to see even the frameworks in the bill so that as we engage with the departments and provinces, we're clear in terms of the kinds of frameworks that you are dealing with. So we're really not much worried about the thickness. Well, it's still not yet as thick as the E&E, if you like. E&E remains the thickest. But secondly, the proliferation for us, again, is not a big issue. Because we still are able to do oversight over those. But the bottom line is that you don't want money getting lost somewhere in the context of the equitable share. I mean to say, yeah, in the equitable share. Deboko can tell you a story. He told us ourselves as a committee about the PIG Eastern Cape some time back. And he knows what happened to the equitable share component of roads construction in the Eastern Cape. It did something that was, well, that we know today that Mr. Sokoni knows that there is a train that travels about, it travels only over weekends. So it was kind of resuscitated using the equitable share component. And the whole PIG, the train travels between East London and Mthatha. And the whole PIG was used for roads. Again, Mr. Sokoni can tell you a good story about roads between from Mthatha to Coffee Bay. And so clearly this conditional grant for us. I mean, look, you're talking here national priorities. And so clearly if there are national priorities, there surely must be conditionalities. But there must also be some norms and standards. How do you benchmark each province's performance and so on? And so I think for us, really, it's really not still a big deal. We are worried about how can we do oversight on the equitable share? Because it does create this problem Mr. Sokoni was raising of discretion. And so anything is just possible if people are not spending at the level that they must spend. And so we really need to strengthen this oversight issues. And so for us, really, again, still not a big issue. For us, because we are worried about discretion, really. Because we might be floating towards some federalism unintentionally and so create unintended consequences, especially for national policy. One of the big issues is the school nutrition issue.
one province was at some stage feeding for 3 days, whereas others were feeding for 5. And so these are some of the kinds of problems. We're talking conditional grants. So for us, really, it would be nice to have everything being a conditional grant for that matter, so that you are therefore able to hold everybody much more accountable. Now, there is a department who's representing arts and culture. You see, I want to lead you in your presentation, and I want to lead the members, because what you've done here is not to do what we have asked you to do. The presentation is this one. Community libraries. So I just want to take everybody through this. Page 1, you see the transformational agenda. Page 2, you see the library transformation charter. Page 3, you see the indigenous languages. Page 4, you see the priorities. 09 and 10, then you see priorities for TAC, and then the operations planning to 09-10, and then you then see the expenditure of the third quarter, last financial year, and then you see the achievements of the provinces, and then you see the achievements up to date nationally, and then you see the major challenges, and then you see the way forward, comments. Where I'm seated, it does not speak to the discussion of the division of revenue being that we're dealing with now. It's just about, it's just a report about the expenditure of the quarter, and therefore the challenges and the way forward. No, in other words, it's the kind of work we do quarterly that they are presenting. It's not the discussion that relates to the current division of revenue. I mean, if you look at the presentation of the Department of Education, there's a mixture of both. There is the spending, but there's also about the whole division of revenue and so on and so on, which is much, much better. And so I'm worried about, therefore, the discussion of I'm just not sure. Does anybody see what I see? And so it does look like we did not understand each other, and therefore the department has not done justice, and so they will not talk to us because they have not done justice. They have decided to tell us about the fourth quarter or third quarter performance, if you like, not about the division of revenue bill before us. Am I being unfair, Dr. Graham?
No, Honorable Chairperson, you are quite correct. Our challenge is that we have not yet, in terms of the Treasury guidelines, got the final business plans in for the year 2009-2010, in terms of which the formal outline of the expenditure for the next year is outlined. The Treasury timetable is different from that of the committee, and it gives us until what, 27 March? The 27th of March to actually finalize those business plans. At the moment, they are only in draft form and have not yet been signed off by provincial and national accounting officers.
Yeah. That's what I was guilty. Now, that's not a guilty. If you listen to what I heard, maybe my ears didn't hear. That's not to allocate funds to a department that is not ready for it, doesn't know exactly what to do with those funds. Because in terms of the division of revenue, that we need to pass by March 19th, it says that here are the, what you call it, proposals from that department. Now, I'm worried about the statement that I'm hearing. In fact, Dr. Dominic knows the challenges
that we have had, I mean, with some provinces around some of these issues that are here today that we wanted to hear about. Now, I'm saying the statement worries me, because tomorrow we're going to ask, especially the provinces, to account. Now, we also supported the during the adjustments, the proposals for this year, which was giving people opportunity to say roughly these are the issues that we should expect in 2009-2010. It's just around the corner now. You know, if those business plans are not ready, then what do we do, Mr. Plum? Do we pass the Division of Revenue?
Let me just refer the committee to page 108 of the bill. I hope I'm talking with the right thing here. It looks like the department is a year late, because on page 108, there's a column that says process for approval of 2010-11 business plans must be submitted in March, not this one. The one for this one, we should have received, and we received already a year ago.
Look, that's not the discussion for now. I'm saying they have not done what I expected them to do. And part of that is to try and persuade us here. Because one of the things we know ourselves is that especially this grant is underspending in the majority of cases. And so we might want to say, well, we want to amend this thing, adjust all of these allocations down. And so their responsibility is to come and plead poverty. Oh no, we've got so much money, they've not done it. And so they don't want money. That's the bottom line. Can I ask us to stretch our legs for about 10 minutes? Then we'll take education. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. General application. Sometimes it's very strange with the monitor, especially when you come out of the hole. I'm actually glad I'm done now. With all of these things.
Line.
and we've had improvements in each of those 3 years. Obviously, the inflation has been factored in, but then there are additional allocations for higher education, for the school nutrition program, for our technical secondary schools, and for the NEED U, the compliance unit that the Minister of Finance spoke about, that add then onto the baseline and bring us to the totals at the bottom of 21.2 billion, 25.1 billion, and 28.1 billion in the third year. You will see, of course, that in the first 2 years, higher education actually does not receive any additional funding, but substantial in the last year. The school nutrition we'll come back to. You can see it grows significantly in the outer years. The technical secondary schools, we'll explain a little bit. It's really a planning grant in year one and then growing into implementation in the second 2 years. And our NEED U as well is to a large extent a conceptualization and planning in 09-10, moving into implementation in the following years. So, Chair, that's our overview of the national department, but I'm sure this committee certainly would have an interest in the sector as a whole, which then obviously includes the provincial education budget. And, Chair, you will see, you know, I think, some rather distressing news there. Now, we understand, of course, the constraints that we're facing, and we certainly hope that provinces will be able to continue with the programs they have had during the course of the year. But you will see that in respect of all these areas that have been identified over the MTF, none of this money in fact flows in the first year. It is then carried into the second and third year of the MTF, the 1.3 billion and the 4.3 billion. Chair, I might mention that this does not talk to the provincial infrastructure grants, the municipal infrastructure grants. Clearly, Treasury will talk to those, but you will see there that things like the extension of no-fee schools, we only pick it up in the second year. Grade R infrastructure, big need, 100 million, but second and third years. Other infrastructure, these are the smaller areas that the provinces have identified, not the MIGs, etc. We ask for money for inclusive education. We've been allocated some, but again, it's something we have to wait for. And then critically, the reduction of the learner-educator ratio, employing more teachers, once again, very little in this coming year. And I think, Chair, that might be our overall concern. As I say, we understand the impact of the financial crisis on government finances, but at this stage, we do hope that education to a large extent can be protected from any implications of that, particularly at the provincial level. So, Chair, if we look at the 209 baseline allocations, you'll see there total education funding, that's both national and provincial, virtually 140 billion rand, and that's after the government-wide cuts that have had to be effected. We accept that. This translates to around 5.7% of GDP, which is probably as high as many other countries would expect. We have set, obviously, a target of 6% that we'd love to be moving to, but that's where it is now. Of this total of 140 billion odd, provincial spending is 86.6%, so by far the largest amount goes there. Baseline adjustments at provincial level over the MTF period are 18.8 billion, you'll recall, but as I say, very little of that flows immediately, and that is going to put pressure on us in the next year or two. Biggest expenditure, predictably perhaps, is the compensation of employees, but you'll note that's down to just under 75%. If you recall, we did talk about an 80-20 split at one stage. We were up at 85%, so certainly those personnel costs have come down as a percentage of total expenditure, but in part that's why we were looking for additional funds to reduce the learner-educator ratio. We believe it probably could go back up to 80% without compromising the system. Conditional grants, Chair, are an interesting one. It's a very small percentage of total education funding, the 1.8%. But I think, and perhaps in light of your earlier comment about how nice it would be if all the money was conditional grant, I know we're not going to get to that kind of stage, but I think we can argue that this little 1.8% of total education funding, because of its highly targeted, well-managed nature, in fact, has an impact on the system that is probably well beyond that 1.8% level of funding, and I think we do see a number of areas that have been there. Chair, I'm going to skip then this total one, and thank you for that
advice, Chair, but this indicates what we're doing with the conditional grant and what we have done with it during the course of this year. And as you say, we will come and report to this committee at an appropriate stage in terms of our progress there. So we turn then to page 15, Chair, which deals with the 209 MTF. And Chair, what I want to concentrate is on the three big conditional grants that we have, and just reflect on what's happened to them there. That would be critical. The first one, of course, is to note that the FET recap grant comes to an end at the end of March this year, and that is one, perhaps, of the, I think, more successful conditional grants we've had, and certainly one that has made an impact on the system. We expect, certainly, if you look at the spending levels, to use 99% certainly of the funds there. Clearly, if there's any uncompleted work, particularly work that has already been commissioned, restructuring, rebuilding and recap, we would look for a rollover, but that's going to be fractional. It will be spent. We will obviously continue to evaluate it between April and June. That is a condition of the grant. But the important point here, and I think for this committee, since the grant is now being phased out, it is the understanding with National Treasury that the funds that were in the conditional grant now get put into the equitable share and should be part of your provincial allocation and hopefully part of your provincial education allocation, particularly for the FET program. Chair, we're making this point. You understand the context. You spoke about discretion, etc. earlier, but this is something that obviously we will be watching. We go through a budget standards exercise. We will be looking to ensure that this money is there, but it will be a critical element that we look at. I have to say the last bullet is positive, that there are initial indications from provinces that the funds have in fact been received. They will remain within the FET sector. Chair, if that's the case, I think we are starting to respond to the skills needs of the country, but anything that is lost from there would certainly be a concern. So that's just perhaps a reflection on that one, an ending program. Chair, our biggest conditional grant is the school nutrition program, and of course on this one there has been particularly good news. There is substantial growth over the period. You'll see, if you recall, this year, 2008-09, we had an allocation of about 1.5 billion rand. So we're seeing an additional 800 million odd going into the, nearly 900 going into the first year. But obviously it has to buy more, and I'll explain that in a moment. But then, of course, substantial growth even in the second year, 3.6 billion, and even further growth, another 900-odd billion in 2011. So really, Chair, I think we can say government is certainly demonstrating its commitment to this particular program, and we're seeing, I think, substantial resources. Just to say that in this regard, we do have minimum norms, so these are not negotiable. Minister has determined these. And they will apply as from 1st of April for the 2009-10 financial year, and that's the basis on which, in fact, our bid was constructed and that Treasury have allocated to us. The minimum norm is firstly to feed all learners in quintiles 1, 2 and 3 primary schools, so essentially your 60% forest primary schools, all should be fed, all learners there. We now, from 1st of April this year, we start to implement the program in quintile 1 secondary schools. Your poorest 20% of secondary schools will be getting feeding schemes. Chair, it's non-negotiable. Feeding must take place on every school day. On average, that works out to 198 school days a year. That's what we expect schools to be feeding, and we will also obviously be monitoring that. Chair, we have had a little increase even during the course of this year in the cost of food because of the rising food prices, and this continues into 2009. The average meal cost in that financial year will be calculated at 1.80 per learner per day. And I think you would recognize, Chair, that 1.80 doesn't buy you a huge amount. So obviously we've got to try and look at how efficiently we spend this. And I have to say, Chair, here, one of the issues we've continually got to look at as government is that besides ourselves, who are now spending in excess of 2 billion rand a year buying food, other departments buy food as well, social development, food parcels, health buys, etc. And we probably need to streamline overall government's food buying program so that we can buy in bulk, we can pack in bulk, we don't have to have fancy packaging or whatever, that we're able to get the stuff at a better price. So I think that's something that government overall would have to look at. We will certainly participate in that to see how much more we can buy for 1.80 rand. Secondary learners, of course, they're older, they eat more, so the calculation is that they would cost then 1.3 times the value of a primary learner, so the cost per meal there would be 2.35 rand. Okay, beyond that though, and that really is an initial norm and it's starting to build up, but the minister has also agreed that we would move in the two outer years of the MTF with further norms, and obviously the first element there is that this program would be extended to quintile 2 secondary schools in 2010-11 and then up to quintile 3 secondary schools in 2011-12. So like we have primary schools, quintile 1, 2 and 3, by the third year of the MTF we should be in the same position in our secondary schools, 60% of our children in fact being fed. The average meal cost in those two outer years will increase as well. The primary cost will increase to 2.10 rand in the first year, in the second year rather, and in the third year up to 2.30 rand. And then the secondary, we've actually increased the ratio as well to 1.75 times that of a primary learner. That would mean 3.80 rand in the second year and 4.10 rand per learner per day. Chair, we've also been able to allocate some funds to provinces to assist with the planning around the feeding of secondary schools. That is work that's being done at the moment, so that from 1st of April, all provinces should be in a position to start rolling that out without delay. Some provinces, I know at least Western Cape, I don't think there are any others, have actually started from 1st of January doing the secondary learners. It's something we can't, obviously wouldn't want to stop at all, but they have allocated their own provincial funds to this in order to implement the program as from 1st of January. They were the only province that was able to do that. So, Chair, I think the school nutrition program is looking okay, and it's one that, as I say, we will continue to try and ensure maximum efficiency so that we don't lose any of the value of that money. If I can turn then to the second conditional grant, which is the HIV and AIDS conditional grant. If you recall, this grant is really a preventative mechanism. Education, they say, the best immunization against HIV and AIDS. And provinces have been allocated these money largely to run life skills programs for learners, but of course teachers benefit as well from those. As I say, these are relatively small amounts when you compare them to things like the school nutrition program, total of 177 million in 09-10, growing a little bit in 2011 to 188 and 199 in the outer year. Chair, although it hasn't yet been causally shown, the fact that infection rates among 19 to 25 year olds are dropping across the country does suggest that perhaps this program is part of the contribution towards that. Clearly many other initiatives as well, but it does suggest that this grant is also then worth maintaining and is benefiting. As I say, the primary focus of the grant to ensure access to an appropriate and effective integrated system of prevention, care and support for children either infected or affected by HIV or AIDS, and then also the education and training, particularly for school management teams, for educators to develop, implement and manage life skills education. It is a compulsory part of the program, so essentially this is about equipping teachers both in terms of their own training as well as materials in terms of HIV and AIDS, but many of these also link with other social issues of drug and substance abuse, gender abuse, those kind of areas, so it's thrown in to that package. And as I say, I think all of our schools will tell us this has been beneficial to them. Okay, turning then to the third conditional grant that we will be running over the coming MTF period. This is a new one. It follows, as I say, I think a relatively successful conditional grant for the technical college recapitalization. The recognition now is that our technical schools in the system have been neglected over a number of years, and quite honestly, again, if you want skills, this is where they start. We have around 100 technical schools in the system that at the moment are just designated as public ordinary schools. They're funded in the same way as a public ordinary school, but I think we'd all appreciate that running a technical facility is inherently more expensive. You have equipment, you have lecturing staff at different levels that all demand perhaps higher resource inputs. So thankfully, the Treasury has allocated us in the coming year a planning grant of 4.6 million. We will be using that primarily to do an audit of all 100 technical schools, find out what their situation is, where they are, who they're working with, what they need, etc. That would then be factored into the two outer years. 80 million we can start to spend in the second year, obviously getting some immediate matters attended to, and then perhaps the biggest spending process in the third year, the 200 million that we would use to recapitalize 100 technical schools and provide them with the kind of equipment and workshop. And I'd appeal to you, Chair, if any of you have or still get the chance to go and visit any of our FET technical colleges at the moment, go and look at what your recap grant has done for those colleges. They're modern, they're well-equipped, they look good, there are children in there. I shouldn't say children, these are older youth largely, including women, of course, doing the mechanical engineering stuff. It's wonderful to see. So please do yourselves a favor. This is our new, I think, cohort of technical people coming through the system, and the technical school will feed into that to a large extent. So, Chair, that's the detailed work that we've done in regard to these aspects. As I say, the overall picture is not necessarily a very encouraging one. We certainly know it's going to be tight in the national department. Provinces are aware of that. But let me also say, Chair, that there's nothing like financial pressure to focus the mind. And I think certainly for us, we have embarked already with the Minister on a process of relooking at every cent that we spend, where we're spending it, how we're spending it. And I think in the end, probably, it will be good for the system that we have a couple of years of tighter financial discipline. Chair, can I pause there? I don't have any additions from the CFO. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, TG. Just to ask you to do something for us as a country, as a committee, just to say we want you, look, this is all done in good faith. But what we know, Mr. Sokono was saying this thing earlier, I'm not sure whether you were already here. You remember the 2.7 billion additional math schools that was given to departments of education, and some of them decided not to allocate that. Only two had allocated. Had we not come in much early, that money would have been lost somewhere. Now, I'm saying this because we do want to ask you and National Treasury to follow this up, which is in the allocation of the FET. Your last bullet says, initial indications from the provincial education departments are that the funds have been received through the equitable share. I want to ask you just to go and ascertain whether that money is there, whether for each FET it has been published, etc., so that we must be 100% sure. Let's not take it in good faith. We don't say we don't trust them. All I want to ensure is that this program must not fall now, at a time where money has been shifted from where it was to the equitable share. I mean, it's something that has happened in the past. And so I'm just saying, please, just ascertain whether that money is really in the budget of the FET sector, so that we shall have to deal with that. And again, you have allocated to provinces, that is page 18, on a NSNP to assist with the implementation cost to implement feeding at secondary. Again, I do want to ask you again to follow that up, because we know the story in the Eastern Cape. We know the story in some other provinces. I mean, you know each province's problems. It would be nice again just to follow that through, so that what comes out must not be a bit later. I mean, you remember the story now about these late results of matric, because people were like kind of complacent. And so we don't want to react a bit later. Let's follow all of these things as speedily as now, so that firmly the money that has been given to assist for the implementation at secondary, again, does not get lost somewhere, because people are doing all sorts of funny things. And of course, the FET allocation, as I'm saying, please, I do want to urge you that working with yourself if you think you can manage it. I wanted also National Treasury to be working with you guys just to ensure that all of the funding, firstly, is in the system, but secondly, it goes where it is intended to go, so that we are not kept caught with our pants down. We were trying to catch up with people who have lost money somewhere. Comments, questions, and clarities? Thank you, DG. Mr. Potter?
Here, perhaps, yes, here's a comment. As you see, the nutrition school, national school nutrition program, the outcomes on the 31st of December, 31st of the 1st of January, all provinces have spent to total allocations are very low. Now they get more money. Already last year they're not spending the money. Also on HIV, which is on page 9 and if you take it, yeah, page 9 and then page 16, the new allocations. And also HIV, I'm concerned about my province, Limpopo. On that stage, at 31st of 12, 2008, they only spent 27%. And this on page 11. They only spent 27% of the total. Now they received already again 25.882. So, Chair, that is a concern for me. If you take the spending trends, some of the provinces are spending very high on HIV.
I said we must not get into that discussion for now. It is a useful discussion.
Yeah, but if you ask that, also department can investigate that for us and come back to us. But what is the reason for that issue? Because if you go to the province, they will tell you we have a new plan. But that new plans are never implemented, or is implemented with never had any results. Because if you take HIV, especially in Limpopo now, education, only spending 27% until the end of January, so it's February, March. So they can't spend that money at the end of it. And that is creating a problem. So we will come to the provinces, but I would like to...
What you must do, they must investigate that. Because part of the big issue we know Limpopo forever face, they use this grant only over weekends. But if that is then the case, one of the issues the department might want to do might be to consider withholding. Well, I mean this thing has been going on for a long time. Withholding, no, we're coming back. I'm saying if we look at that properly. And withholding, and just with the view of assisting them, because they surely should not be getting all the amounts all the time. And so you are right, let's look at that properly, and then say, I mean, Limpopo, since our engagement all the time, they are the most, even now, look at the picture, they are the most that have these problems of spending, precisely because they were saying, they always say, they use it over weekends, but for safety.
Here also in the National School Nutrition Program, if you're on page 9 of the outcomes, and when you're coming back to certain schools, you know we visit schools in Northwest, that they said they haven't got money for nutrition, for feeding kids. But if you're looking into the spending until the end of December, they have only spent 55% of the budget. Now, where is that coming in that they only feed the kids for 3 days a week? And that is issues, you can ask the department, they will come up with different stories. But that's why I said to the national department, because that is the issue, what I think, Chair, and I'm honest to say, that the national department must monitor that. Really, and they must, as they say, not withholding it, it's another issue. Because that's not the right result. Because the kids are still not be feeding. And that is my issues here, that I can say, what is the reason? And that must come from my school.
In fact, I also expect Mr. Sokoni to speak about his friends, the Eastern Cape. It's a funny picture that we see up there. But Mr. Sokoni. No, just speak about the Eastern Cape, but proceed. He was doing on behalf of the committee in that thing.
That chairperson, you know, I think that we appreciate additional funding that is being given on school nutrition, especially extending it to secondary schools. But I don't know, just FFC is saying the devil is in the detail. You know the problem that we had. I think the National Department knows very well that we corrected an abnormal situation there, where they were feeding for only 3 days instead of the 5 days. And when reports come back, they say no, we now feed now.
Mr. Sokoni, one of the things I want you to focus on, which is again abnormal. Mind you, the Eastern Cape has had serious problems. But look at that. It's the highest spender now, all of a sudden. Magic went. Huh? Terrible stuff. I mean, there's something fundamentally wrong there. It's not what you are saying. It is what they are doing and saying. And therefore, it's something that we still have to go back and look at in the Eastern Cape. Something fundamentally wrong, especially because Mr. Sokoni is right, when they were also feeding for 3 days, etc. But look at the beautiful picture all of a sudden. Can't believe it. I was telling him the other day that, incidentally, his brother is the premier in his address, that somebody has misled the premier in respect of the Department of Education. And here it is. Proceed, Mr. Sobot.
In fact, you know, with this beautiful vertical expenditure that you see there, they still owe people. That they have not. In fact, the Eastern Cape has come up with a very good program of empowering your small business. But for the old people, for the past 5 years, that they have not been, that they have not paid. For the past 5 years. Now we're going to another term of office. We'll go to another term of office. What we do. In fact, what we pick up from there, that chair, these 3 days, I think that is good to hear that they have moved to 5 days. But we must, what you call it, do ourselves, our own, what you call it, check to see whether the 5 days is real. Because I don't want to say I doubt what you call it, the 5 days. But this picture, we asked the National Department not to speak to this picture. But if there are provinces in December, we have spent 51%, 55%. I know what they will come up with if you ask them. They will tell you no. There were some receipts or invoices that had not been paid and what. But this picture is real. It is a real picture. That is, clearly, how do we deal with this situation? Because we know the need out there. HIV is not giving us space as well, and clearly, there are more children who are coming to the system. I'm talking about primary school children, let alone those who are supposed to be added into the system from a secondary school level. But I think that, Chair, maybe what we need to suggest to the National Department is that some provinces have come to us and said, no, we're having gardens now. They are doing good things because they are feeding their students from their garden, they're supplementing that school nutrition thing. But there are no norms and standards clearly as to if you go to Western Cape, you go to Eastern Cape. Eastern Cape is doing their own thing. Western Cape is doing their own thing. When is the department? I think the department must come up now with clear norms.
so that it is very clear, if you measure what the Western Cape does against Limpopo or whatever province, so it's clear that you can benchmark one against the other. But today, if you go into Western Cape, they're doing their own thing. You go to Northern Cape, different. You think that you are in another country, you go to Gauteng, different story. I think that we need, the department needs to come up with norms and standards around that. But also, it's clear that, Chair, if Eastern Cape, as at December, assuming for that this was correct, what the correct teacher at the end of December, so now it means that they're heading for over expenditure. I do know, Mr. Brown, I do know that Eastern Cape, they have got some other pockets of money that are not being rolled over and over. We don't know whether they are going to be used directly to close that gap. You know, it's a very good problem. I really pity my brother. It moved from one extreme. It moved from one extreme to the other. Some time back, there was a huge understanding. All of a sudden, there was a huge overspending. They had to tighten belts. There had to be belt tightening there. But be that as it may, I just want to come to page 4. I want us to come to page 4. We understand that there is belt tightening this year. But now this belt tightening is coming on infrastructure. Expenditure there is zero. Allocation is zero. Can we really afford it to sacrifice what we call either the area that we thought, the department thought that no, we could sacrifice what we call infrastructure for 2009. I mean, the situation, the report that we got from the department around the infrastructure, especially as with great R, other infrastructure, you talk about it. Yes, the whole what you call an issue of the infrastructure. It is a problem. But also, it also relates to the last part of reduction of learner ratio to, I mean, the learner to what you call to educator ratio. If you go, though in the townships, for instance, you find that many students are moving to your former, what you call the white areas, the model of the school. But if you go to those schools there, if at a school there's 50 kids or students or learners, whatever you call them, in a class, then that is regarded as normal. 50. But many of them have got above 50. And now, if for instance this year, that is the area we thought that it can be sacrificed.
You're looking at 100 million. Why is it that at least maybe 50 million should have been put 09-10 or even 20 so that you don't just rush into 100? And then the following one, maybe something like 50 million other infrastructure. I mean, all of that allocation now is lumped into 10, 11, and then it grows again very, very, I mean, why was there no plan that just to say, well, 09, 10, because you're putting in place something like, even if it was a million rand or 2 cents, and then jump then to 100 million for these infrastructure issues. I think it's something that, for me, would be useful to understand. And all the other things, I mean, you're putting in so much money in the second year and the third year when you could have at least started something. Your intentions are right, but already you are lumping all of these things in the second and third years.
Or, Chai, is it perhaps that the, what is the department saying, that at a national level, like my someone who, in other words, we're saying this year we're not going to build any schools or any classrooms. Now, I'm just telling PG according to the word of God, what is in front of us. Because if it is what is not that, we should have a different picture then. But that's what reflects. You can take this book to anyone who spent this year. You're not spending on infrastructure. You have stopped building schools. You have stopped building classes. So how do we deal with that situation? The no fee school. I think that is, we have already commented about no fee school being quite free. But I think the issue that we had said, Chairperson, in the previous years is, I don't know which one is the quintile 3 area one. Because the problem that has not been clarified by the department is that where are these quintile 3 areas? Because what we have discussed in the past with the department is that whoever uses whatever measures people use, they decide this is a quintile 3 or a quintile 4 because the school is situated in a particular area. But the kids, students who move to those, who attend there, do not necessarily come from those areas. In fact, in many what you call the cases, you find that if the school is situated in a kind of affluent area, the students from those particular areas are not there. It's those students that are being moved out. Now, how do we want to kind of arrive at a situation to say this is a quintile 3 area? But the last comment that one would like to make is around the transport. I was just looking around for transport. Maybe I missed as to where is this what you call transport. Sorry? the transport for students. Because I see in the Division of Revenue that the government says no, the Department of Education will be responsible. Remember previously the FSC has raised the question of where does the responsibility of transporting students lie? But I don't see the allocation here of that. I know it could be a small one because a negligible allocation, but I think that for those kids who travel long distances, in Eastern Cape, in Limpopo, in the Northern Cape, it would be important to know that there is an allocation for this. And coming from this 2008 year to, we have experienced situations where the transporters have sometimes stopped transporting because there was no allocation. I know in Gauteng, Mpumalanga, the department would say that there's no money now, but where is it provided for here? Thank you.
My question is about technical secondary school. Would that, you have something to say? Okay, go ahead. Would that include comprehensive high schools? Because the fine colleges are a bit out for children, say in the rural areas. Usually, the fine colleges are in towns. But comprehensive high schools could be out in the rural areas as well. So these tech college schools, would they include comprehensive high schools as well? Now, seeing that there is no allocation for 2009-10, does it mean that if a school has had a budget allocated to it, say for the past years, and the school has not built, and then all of a sudden another school is built in its under its name, and that budget is used somewhere else, it means then this year it will not get anything until 2010-2011. There is one school that is being that is following up its budget, and they've actually communicated to the Minister of Education about that school.
No, thanks. I think that you have already commented about the ending of your FET recapitalization grant. But, and I appreciate the, I'm sure we appreciate the challenge that DG gives to us, that maybe we should visit FET colleges. We have started with that. There is what you call improvement. Whether we have reached the stage to say now this money should be given to equitable share, one really does not know. But there is where, I mean, the challenge that one found out in visiting those schools was that for higher education, and higher education is classified as your universities or your University of Technology, whatever. But at the provincial level, these FET colleges seem to be often, you know, you go to the district and say, but who is in charge here? They say, no, it's not our baby. It's a baby of the province. The province is just an office there. In Gauteng, I would say in Commissioner Street, just there. But the real, what you call the work, is done at a district level. But no one does, is responsible, seems to be responsible for those deputy colleges. One, at a higher education level, there is an effort. It makes provision for those students who are poor. But at an FET level, there's no what to call it. There was this request, was a grant, but in terms of students being what to call it, getting bursaries, understand that there is some students who do long courses who do not get what to call a bursary. I mean, I got it from the deputy principal of one of the colleges. So I'm saying, how do we want to call it? At this time where the economy is down, and we want to empower the students so that unemployment is rise outside there, but students do not have, in other words, that prevents your poor students from having access to education because they can't pay a school fee, those who can't pay. In fact, my constituency office has had to go out of the way to pay what you call a registration fee for a student so that the student can be what you call. Now, don't report me, Chairperson. Yeah, because we wanted that student to be what you call a student to be registered. Registration was just closed. But in other words, but there's no better for the thing that is doing a longer term. Those who have passed matric. In other words, those who have passed matric, there's no bursary. Those who get bursaries is those who are still at the kind of FET or what is it called? Those high, kind of a high school, what you call it earlier. But for those who have passed matric who want to do advanced courses, there is no what you call it, support for them. How does it work then?
Well, maybe then the DG might also consider compensating you for the student you have registered,
DG,
and your team.
Rather, let me just say, Yabonga Kulu, thank you for contributing that. But, Chair, let me just correct them up front. There are substantial bursaries available for students at FET colleges. They're available for students doing the NCV program, that's the 3-year National Certificate Vocational Program. If I recall rightly, the amount is some 300 million rand a year. Provided in bursaries, they're managed by the NSFUS program, but they are allocated specifically to students in FET colleges. So please, Chair, I would want to know if there are students who are not getting these bursaries, who you think should be, because certainly it's our intention that poor students should certainly not be excluded from this area. Chair, I take the point, sorry, I'm working backwards, if that's all right.
around the responsibility of FET colleges. I think it's become even more pronounced since the passage of the legislation in 2007, which in a sense gave the colleges, the FET colleges, a degree of autonomy, etc. And the province is kind of, and you can hear some of it, oh no, it's national department that runs these. Well, of course it's not, but there's that ambiguity. I think, Chair, there is a discussion about the location of colleges broadly, whether we need an agency agreement or something like that. And let me say, it's not just, I think, applicable to the FET colleges. We have agricultural colleges, we have nursing colleges, we have Justice College, all of these things, and they need to be sorted out in their location, I think, determined, because you're right, some of them will stand the danger of being neglected, although, as I say, fortunately, in budget terms, they seem to be getting what they wanted, but it is a concern. Okay, on the technical schools, let me just also say, the idea that FET colleges are only in town, I think we've got to be careful of. Although there are only 50 FET colleges, they spread across 106 sites across the country. And certainly some of them are indeed in quite remote rural areas. Now, yeah, hopefully they're serving those populations. If not, then we need to find out. But it certainly has been our intention to not just make them urban colleges. There is a very real sense of some of these other colleges contributing in the rural areas as well. I'm not quite clear about the comprehensive high schools, Chair. It sounds like a specific incident, and maybe I need to talk with the Honourable Member. But certainly, let me say, if a comprehensive high school is offering a technical stream, then certainly it must qualify for that technical recap grant as well, yeah? As I say, it sounded like a specific thing. But in principle, as I say, we'd want to support them. Chair, the transport issue, certainly there is money in provincial budgets. And perhaps, sorry, I should just make a general point that perhaps we didn't head our slides clearly enough. Of course, what we're talking about in our slides is additional allocations, all right? There is, in fact, in the 2009-10 year, an amount of 2.58 billion in infrastructure grants to provinces, so that's that money. Provinces themselves have allocations. So certainly, Chair, there is money being spent on infrastructure. It will continue to be spent in the coming year. These will just be additional amounts coming in the second 2 years. And let me also say, Chair, I think what we have seen is a significant growth in those infrastructure budgets over the past couple of years. If you look back even 2000 on, you will see a dramatic growth since then, certainly. The transport one, as I say, there are provincial budgets for that, and all provinces do spend money on scholar transport. There is still, I think, it's not a dispute about the responsibility, it's just simply provincial choices. Some of them choose to run their own transport, and they therefore commission the bus drivers, etc., and all that. Others use the Department of Transport as an agency, and they simply say, these are the learners that must be transported, or if you go there. Let me just correct the impression. The Gauteng bus story was not to do with scholar transport. That was your general bus subsidy that wasn't being paid. It wasn't your scholar subsidy. It wasn't the Department of Education at all on that one. Again, Chair, let me say, this is probably something that over time needs to be sorted out. Certainly the Department of Transport really believes it is best placed to provide scholar transport, and in particular, I think they make the compelling case that when a general bus drives past a village and picks up people, it would be foolish to say, no, your scholars can't get on this bus, you must wait for the next one, because that's a scholar transport bus, a bus is a bus, let's get people to where they have to get. So I think that probably makes the case, but we will sort that one out. Chair, on the quintile one, obviously we use our Stats South Africa data, and I know there are questions about how this then produces these different quintiles, but in the end, obviously we need some mechanism, and until I suppose someone tells us of a better way of understanding poverty other than your Stats SA data, based on census data, etc., as to where poor people are living, I think we might have to stick with it. But let me also say, Chair, that the Minister has initiated the process of reviewing the whole school funding policy, and within that, the question of, in particular, the five quintiles. I think one of the points perhaps the Honourable Sengane is making, the difference between a quintile one and a quintile two school, very, very small. So the question might be, do you want difference between one, two, and three, or do you bundle them all into one and say, these are poor schools, those are rich schools, let's deal with them, and let's deal with them. So that sort of discussion is ongoing, Chair, but at the moment, obviously, we stick with the quintiles. The no-fee schools are now taking up to 60% 60% Omar schools, and that you know, should, in a sense, confirm that idea that most of those schools are dealt with in the same way. The infrastructure, I think, in terms of the you know, way it's been allocated, FFC would talk to that. I think it's right to say we have sacrificed anything. I think it's us as a country that have had to make sacrifices, and perhaps this is part of the picture, but they would speak to that. Chair, around the norms and standards on the school nutrition program, we will certainly look at that and see if we can find a tighter definition, but you know, we've also got to recognize provinces are different. The Western Cape, for example, actually has centralized kitchens. So they have half a dozen kitchens around the province, and from those kitchens, mass production, and they truck it out, in fact, to schools as ready-cooked meals direct to schools. Now, that can work in the Western Cape. It's not going to work in the Northern Cape. You know, by the time we've got the food there, do we go? It's not going to work in the Eastern Cape either. So there would be different models and ways of dealing with this across provinces, and I would want to see, I suppose, to what extent we can tie that down. We certainly give the direction that as far as possible, your idea of co-ops, of people getting involved, etc., is a good thing. But it's also been clear, Chair, it's a complicated thing, and that's partly where Eastern Cape fell down. It was very nice in terms of community mobilization, job creation, and all that. What it failed to do is deliver on the school feeding scheme. Now, it doesn't mean automatically that you go back to a central tenderer, but there is always that tension that we do face around that.
See, let us agree that it is not intended to create jobs.
No.
It's about feeding. Now, if then jobs are created, they should not compromise feeding.
No, that would be our position, Chair, and as I say, it doesn't mean then you go back to a single big tenderer. There must be a balance between them. I think you can deliver, and some provinces like Northwest, I think, have demonstrated you can deliver services as well as creating jobs, and that's what we've got to try and find, Chair. So I appreciate that, Chair. Chair, broadly on the Eastern Cape, I worry when you say it's a beautiful picture, because of course people have picked up it's not a beautiful picture. This is potential, certainly, overspending. I think we do need to recognize that. I can say, because the Minister announced it yesterday, Chair, that we are planning a support intervention with the Eastern Cape. The Minister and the MEC yesterday signed a protocol, intergovernmental protocol. It's the first one we've in fact signed, where we are committed to supporting them in that different way. So we will monitor the issue of the 3 days, 5 days. Obviously, all of those areas would come into this discussion, and we will be supporting them, as you say, and not just standing back and monitoring. That's not the way we do it. Chair, just the Honourable Porter, I think we do need to clarify just two things. One is on the school nutrition spending picture that he picked up on, that certainly looks problematic, but I think we just do need to, I suppose, protect provinces a little bit in this regard. If you have a look at the report on the school nutrition program, that's page 9. You will see the additional original allocation was 1.58 billion, but the adjustment estimate gave us this additional 344 million. That, in fact, was only paid to provinces in January. So, in fact, what you see as the percentages is probably a bit unfair, because they now are being judged in terms of their spending against the revised allocation, but it's the revised allocation they hadn't yet had, in fact. So if you look at Limpopo's 195 million that they've spent, in fact, as a percentage, to be fair to them, you should take it against the 252, the original allocation. The 54, obviously, they now know about, and they're going to pick up spending, etc. But in fact, if you set 195 against 252, it's very close to the 75-76% that we would be targeting around the end of December. So I'm not saying anything's perfect, certainly, but I think we just need to recognize that that additional 344 million has skewed the spending rate, as it were, and understand that. And Chair, also just to say, on the HIV and AIDS conditional grant, you will see on the POPO that unlike all the other provinces which have had their full allocation transferred by the end of January, you will notice that we have withheld the last quarter payment to Limpopo. They're only at 18 million. Until they account for progress on spending, they're not going to get the last 6 million odd. But sadly, that'll go back to Treasury if it's not spent. So we will make sure that that does happen. As I say, when we withhold the grant, we also send the team in there to say, now how can we pick up and deal with this? All right, sorry, I'm running on. Chair, perhaps then finally, your 2 points. absolutely, we will follow up, we will monitor it. We do have, as I say, that budget standards exercise that I think is getting much better now at following the money right down to where it's spent, and we would obviously appreciate an opportunity to come back and report to you on this. Thank you, Chair.
No, thanks, Honourable Chair. Now, the DG actually adequately covered quite a number of issues, but there are a few that I want to raise. On the learner transport, I think we are saying that this issue around integration and how we get that integration right, the investigation that we'll be doing. But one must also be mindful that once you've got a proper learner transport policy, it shouldn't foster taking kids away from certain schools into other schools, because then you're perpetuating the inefficiency in the education system. What you need is possibly a specific dispensation for rural areas as well, because that is where the your problems you have with learner transport. In the urban areas, you need to resolve other issues, and not through the learner transport system. On FET colleges, clearly quite a large discussion is needed on FET colleges, but particularly as it relates to its locality and its strategic importance for the country. And I think we need to move in the direction in which our tertiary institutions are currently actually managed. And shouldn't we use that model to be able to replicate it for FET colleges, and for that matter, shifting the function away from provinces to national government completely? It's something that we still need to resolve. On infrastructure, the DG is right. Currently, they're spending $5 billion. These are additions. What we want to see possibly in year three, and once we've got the aggregate budgets for four provinces, because we're getting them now, we want to see the budgets actually growing to $7-8 billion by year three, given these additions that we have there. But the members must also be conscious of the fact that currently there's a big discussion underway on how we need to accelerate infrastructure spending in education. So we are now in contact with the Department of Education. Certain proposals are being put on the table. So what we hope to see in future years, in addition to the 6-7 that we see in the baselines for education, that to be accelerated quite rapidly over the period, but also the mode of implementation needs also to be discussed in the, together with it. Thank you, Chair.
Now, I think we appreciate Chair the clarity. However, we got last year, we have always been concerned about this issue of infrastructure. And the report, for instance, we got from National Treasury is that, let alone the 2.7 billion that we could not locate it. I wish we can still follow on that this year. We must find it. Where, how many people, how much of that has been spent from last year. But with the infrastructure, for instance, we found like that, we know in Eastern Cape that many schools are math schools, but the budget, they had only budgeted for 50 of those schools. I think we've got a problem with grants. Now, what do you do with that situation where people are given money, redirected to something else, not for agents or to call matters where they have got to spend it. So we'd really like to see, to find a way. We're happy with what DJ is saying what Travis is saying, that once they get their budget, the provincial budget, then we can be able to see how provinces are going to spend on infrastructure and be able to trace this 2.7 billion by where it has gone, whether it has been properly spent. Thank you.
You see, part of the bigger discussion then, Mr. Brown, in the department must relate to, in fact, must involve because there's this other matter of which, they always boast about MEC Tswaledi, that I have my own engineer and engineers as a scheme, so that if somebody says we have built these schools, we must then be able ourselves to benchmark. Somebody says that big discussion must also look at that, but also look at the capacity of public works departments across the provinces transfer point, how are you going to accelerate this infrastructure delivery if those departments still lack the kind of capacity? Say, that discussion is critical at that level. Delivering agents, some infrastructure department or engineer or what have you in the Department of Education, how do we ensure that it is available so that as they deal with their own specifications, develop specifications themselves, they must then be able to deal with the delivery agents and therefore not wait in the context of the acceleration. So that discussion is a very critical discussion. I'm also happy that the DG is not bemoaning poverty. And in fact, he understands the circumstances of the time, that there is this huge economic meltdown. And so he's really not saying, well, the allocations are so on. And I'm just happy just to hear that, because it's a useful view also to have. Everybody would always come and plead poverty, and so on and so on. So I know. But then thanks very much for that useful input, DG. I think there's a whole range of oversight issues that are really coming out here. And Mr. Brown did raise this with us. Mr. Sokon is forever saying the poor results that we see across the board are not as a result of what yourselves are doing, but are as a result of what we are not doing ourselves as committees of parliament. And so clearly, you've got all what you've got. We've got to do our own oversight in a manner that is constructive, brutal, and ensures that we raise the pertinent questions so that everybody therefore does all the right things. And so parliament must clearly interact in a manner that is much more constructive, but also raise more pertinent questions so that the money that has to do with infrastructure at schools, for instance, does that at schools. It should not be sitting in the provincial offices, but it must go to the school. It is our work to do that from the point of view of portfolio committees, select committees. And we thank you very much, DG, for that. Now, I don't see social development. I know the Minister of Health is coming in late. There's no lunch, guys, don't worry. Nobody's going to fund lunch. We are told there's no money in Parliament. Nobody hears what you're saying. Mike?
No, no, no. I was saying now, I'm saying housing is applying section 150. Now it's interesting. Now the federal government is doing that. They want to go to the Supreme Court. I think they want to do
this. Okay. Social development is not here. Rather, the social development. The left need army. So I was saying there is no money in Parliament. And so there is no lunch. No, no. Treasury have led by example on Budget Day. There was no gala dinner from the point of view of Treasury. And so we proceed. All what I see on my program here is a break at half past 12. It's not set lunch, and I'm not sure who's going to fund all of us, who's going to buy us some fingers and what have you. The FFC has some surplus. They say it's a paper surplus. It's not cash. I thought they would be able to provide. No, nobody's cooking the books. Now, I'm not sure. Social development, are you here? Social development is not here. Let's then stretch and wait for health. Health is coming in at 2:15. Now, I'm not sure, for those of you who still have some friends and sense, you can walk around and buy each other some food. And we are living in difficult times. And this is unfair because the chairperson of the FFC was ill some time back, and if he does not have lunch before he takes his medication, that is dangerous. not unless he walks over to the FFC. In fact, I want to propose that we walk over to the FFC offices. I'm not sure what they have, Makinda. I hope you've got some tea. There's no tea here, there's nothing, because people are saying Parliament does not have money. So we are going to start our discussion at 2:15, Department of Health. No, at 1 o'clock. At 1 o'clock, social development would be here at 1 o'clock. Mr. Coleni, let's stretch until 1 o'clock. All right. Let's then stretch until 1 o'clock when social development is here. And some of you can start walking around buying some cheese.